There's a series running now on PBS called In Search of Law and Order, which examines different approaches to combating juvenile crime. One city highlighted in the series is Boston, which in 1990 saw a record-setting 152 murders due to gang drug turf wars. In response, community members and law enforcement in Boston started a new collaborative approach to fighting juvenile crime. They brought in the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. They set up a mentoring program called the Street Workers, and they got out the word that they wouldn't hesitate to slam repeat offenders with long federal prison terms. Since then, the murder rate in Boston among teenagers has dropped 65%, and Boston has been held up as a model for other cities fighting youth violence. My guests are probation officer Bill Stort and Judge Sidney Hanlon, presiding justice in Dorchester District Court in Boston. We'll hear from Judge Hanlon a little later in the interview. In the mid-80s, Stort says some neighborhoods were like war zones. There were shootings near the courthouse in Dorchester. I asked Stort just how brazen the gangs were and if they actually came into the courthouse itself.
Well, first of all, you had to know that they were a gang, and they made no bones about who they were. They would march into the courthouse 10, 15, 20 deep to back, quote-unquote, one of their friends who had been arrested. They try to take over the courthouse. They would try to intimidate people. They would intimidate witnesses out in the hallway. I remember a case back in 1986. There were a rash of full-length goose down jackets being robbed at the public transportation stations. And when one of the individuals was brought in for trial, he brought in 20 of his friends. And I was sitting in the courtroom watching it, and the victim would not go forward with the case. And I talked to him outside after the case was dismissed for want of prosecution, lack of prosecution. And, you know, I said, you know, we'll help you, we'll cover you, we'll protect you. But that was wrong. We couldn't have done it. It could not have been done. It was a stupid thing to say. So they tried to stake themselves out in the courthouse. They had already staked themselves out in the neighborhood. And they were beginning to root.
One of the programs you helped create in Boston in response to this gang activity is called Operation Nightlight. You had you yourself and your other probation officers go out on house visits with the police to check up on kids violating probation. What was the thinking behind the pairing up? What was it supposed to accomplish?
Well, probation officers have always been out on the street or in the schools, but we've got away from working at night. When I started in the business 21 years ago, I made it a habit of driving around at night just to check on kids in parks and places that they would hang around. We got away from that. We became our role became that of service brokers. An offender would come into the courthouse, and during the course of the interview, we would try to identify problems, and in that term, we would tie them up with resources to get to the bottom line, which is to get them to deviate from criminal behavior. It wasn't an easy bond to make because bureaucracy being what it is, we felt in the courthouse, we have our problems, the police have their problems, we'll solve ours, police will solve theirs, probation will go home at 4:30, and we expected the police to enforce our terms of probation. Nobody had ever told us, Barbara, that we weren't trained this way, but nobody had ever told us about some of the powers that probation officers do have. It wasn't in our training. It's nobody's fault that that happened, but we had gotten away from the fact that we can make arrests. We can do things when we have reasonable suspicion as opposed to probable cause that somebody's in violation of the terms of probation. We can make an arrest, but we weren't trained that way. So obviously we needed the police department and a partnership with the police department to put that in motion.
What changed once you started going out with the police and confronting these kids in their houses, in their bedrooms, or on the street corner?
Well, what happened, you know, one of my favorite stories obviously was the first night of the joint operation after we put the plan in motion. 1 minute into the first ride, on November 12, 1992, there was a radio call and a shooting on Nelson Street. When we got to the scene, myself and my partner, Richie Skinner, along with our police partners, Bobby Myrner and Bobby Fratalia, the co-filer, really the co-creators of the program. There was a young guy in the middle of the street, Tito Blanco by name, who had a 30-30 hole in his chest. He was still alive. Richie had him on probation. In fact, Tito had been in that day to see him. I walked around the police tape that had been set up and saw across the tape six young men that we knew, I knew, and who by terms of probation were not supposed to be there, nor were they supposed to be out in the street that late at night. They were all supposed to be in the house at 8 o'clock. So I walked around the police tape and on purpose walked into a young man by the name of James. And he turned around, he looked at me, and the first comment out of his mouth is, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I'm out riding in the 5-0, which is a street slang for police car." And his comment back to me was, "That's not fair. You're not supposed to do that." And I think the program was built on that statement. If they didn't think it was fair, then that's what we had to do.
So before this, kids out violating their curfews just wouldn't get caught. They could really get away with pretty much whatever they wanted to, as long as it wasn't, you know, overtly illegal.
Well, on terms, by virtue of the terms of probation, what happened back in 1990 is we changed the terms of probation in the Dorchester court because of there was one cataclysmic event, that being the Kimberly Ray Harbor murder on Halloween night in 1990, when eight juveniles dragged a young lady off a street, and they beat her and raped her and stabbed her 132 times. What we did is we took the standard terms of probation that we use in the state of Massachusetts, which were four, and added eight terms. Once the police department in 1990, Boston Police Department, admitted that we had a gang problem and designated a gang as a group of three or more individuals involved in criminal activity, we wrote that into the terms of probation. You can't be out after 8 or 9 o'clock, you can't hang on the corner of Walk and Don't Walk Street, and you can't be in a group larger than three.
Since you've started the program, how have you assessed how well it's working?
It's been tremendous, Barbara. I think, you know, one of the greatest aspects of the program and one of the ongoing benefits that we see, all of us who go out, we started small, and now in Boston on any given night in a 7-day week, which started with two police officers and two probation officers, is now 50 police officers, 50 probation officers, seven nights a week checking on curfews and checking on offenders. Never has there been a situation where a door has been kicked in, where we've exerted pressure on the individual in their home. That's not what the program's about, and we didn't want that. We can always work with somebody. We can bring an individual into court the next day, into the office, and work with them there. There's no need to enforce terms in their bedroom in most situations. But the ongoing benefit to the program is the response from the parents. We'll knock on a door, and we'll ask to see an offender, and more often than not, we get from the parent, "Thank God you're here. God bless you for doing this. This is wonderful. It's just what he needs." And so the response, that's pretty much what the program has been built on, that response from the parents.
A lot of these kids are under curfew. What are they supposed to do at home all evening?
We've had no trouble. In fact, the compliance rate with terms of probation went from 30 to 70% once we went out and started knocking on doors at night. It's easy to drive a kid off the street, but now the question is, where have we driven them? In more cases, and you know, in some of the stories, some of the things that I've seen, we caught a kid out one night, and I asked him, I said, "You know, you're out after curfew. I do have the power of arrest for violation of probation." And his body slumped. I said, "What's the problem?" And he didn't want to talk in front of the officers. So I took him aside and got out of him the information that his mother's boyfriend comes over the house. And when he's over, he beats him up. He didn't want to be in the house. So I asked him if he was hungry, and he indicated that he was. So I said, "Why don't you hop in the car? We'll go down and do a Big Mac attack or something like that." And I said, "But I'll ask your mother for permission." So I went back in the house, and talk to the mother, get the mother out, and get the boyfriend out. And had a real one-way conversation with the mother about the fact that it was her son. She was putting him in a bad position, and that's her blood. Boyfriends come and go, but her son is her son forever, basically was the tone of the conversation. And I really wouldn't look favorably if, when we came back, if the boyfriend was in the house. So when we did, in fact, return after doing the Mickey D run, he was gone. That's a good thing.
My guest is Bill Stort, probation officer in Dorchester District Court in Boston. We'll talk more after the break. This is Fresh Air. Back with probation officer Bill Stort of Dorchester District Court in Boston. We'll be joined by Judge Sidney Hanlon later in our conversation. Operation Nightlight was just one in a series of programs that you've initiated at the Boston criminal justice system aimed at lessening gang violence. Another one's called Operation Ceasefire. I'd like you to tell us how the police and court officials and state and city and federal forces all work together to get the message out that gang violence just wouldn't be tolerated.
Well, what happened, because of the success of the partnership between police and probation and Nightlight, the next logical step was to see if we could get more partners to the table. There was an incident where a young man came into my partner's office, Richie Skinner's office, and gave him information on a gun ring. The Boston police took that and had a gun sting operation where there was an individual taken down who was running guns from down south. The Boston police next took the step to build a relationship with the ATF agency, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. So now we had three partners sitting at the table, and the program ballooned from there. Now at any given time, we've got 17 agencies sitting at a table who are all working together. If you're bad enough, the Suffolk County District Attorney can send you to state's prison for 15 years. If you're real good, if you're a real good offender, if you've got a huge record and you fit the profile, then you're going to meet my friend, the United States Attorney General, at the end of the table. We have a poster child, and I hate to use that word, but in fact, we go out and publicize that there was a young man by the name of Freddie Cardoza who was caught with a bullet. He was also caught passing a gun to a juvenile because the juvenile would get a lesser sentence. Freddie received 5 years for handing the gun to the juvenile and 14 years and 9 months for possession of a single bullet. But Freddie also had a six-page record. So we sent the message out, individuals like that are not going to be tolerated in the neighborhood or the city.
I read somewhere that you as a kid had a run-in with a kind of gang, or went by the name of a gang. A kid tried or did stab you.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'm lucky. I was 12. I was with my father then December 28th, 1962 he was refereeing a college hockey game in RPI in Troy, New York, and one of my favorite college players gave me a stick. And I took the stick the next day, went out and skated on a pond, and a group of four or five kids came up to me late in the day. They wanted the stick, and I wouldn't give it to them. I never saw the knife coming. 3 weeks later, I get home, some 156 stitches. So that was my first involvement with a gang. I'm lucky. I've been told that I was coated on the table and brought back. So I'm playing with the bank's money.
My guests are probation officer Bill Stort and Judge Sidney Hanlon. She's the presiding justice in Dorchester District Court in Boston. Boston has been held up as a national model in the past decade for innovative programs to combat youth crime. Judge Hanlon, I'd like to talk to you about how some of the new initiatives, and I'm thinking of Project Nightlight and the Street Workers Mentoring Program and Operation Ceasefire, how all of that has, or whether all of that has given you more discretion in setting terms for probation and in sentencing.
Absolutely. If you have some sense that the terms of your probation or the terms of your sentence are going to be enforced, then you can impose more terms. That is, it's kind of useless and counterproductive to say to somebody, I want you to finish school. That's a nice wish. But unless you're sure that somebody is going to be out there monitoring that, somebody's going to see whether that young person is actually in school every day, telling him he's got to go to school without the enforcement does more harm than good, because it gives him a sense that it's just words and he's pulled one over on the system when he doesn't show up the second day after you've put him on probation.
Do you see a different attitude among the kids who come before you in court since Boston started these initiatives? A different respect, or any respect for authority, or maybe a higher awareness of the consequences of their actions?
I think that most of the kids do have a lot of respect for authority. I hear sometimes, oh, he doesn't care about being committed to the Department of Youth Services, which is the correctional facility for juveniles. He doesn't mind. He can do time standing on his head. I never saw anybody give me that attitude in the courtroom. Some of the toughest kids walk out in tears. I think they, for the most part, they do have respect for authority. The difference is I think they have a sense now that we'll work together, so that I can say, you know, I expect you to go to school every day, and if you think I won't send you for not going to school, you ask around. And for the most part, I have the sense that they have, and they've talked to other people, or they've seen me before and they know. I've seen young adults who know me from when they were juveniles, and they say to the lawyer, no, 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 I'll take what she's offering because I know she'll send me.
There's a lot of scrutiny now of juvenile prisons and imprisonment, how to treat young offenders once you send them to jail, and whether violent youths should be tried as adults and serve time with adults. Have juvenile detention facilities in Boston also changed in any way along with the changes that you've made in probation and gun control and sentencing?
Massachusetts has been a national model for a lot of years in terms of treatment for violent offenders. The problem has been, and I think this is in the process of being remedied and has changed, it's been the amount of money that's been spent on it. They have the programs. They work with young people in small groups, not more than 15 or 20, so that the youth culture doesn't take over. You don't have more kids than responsible adults, so they don't set the terms, and you don't have violence in the institution. It's education intensive. It's behavior modification therapy with a really structured sense of points and what behavior is acceptable and what's not, and how to earn rewards like a radio or a visit or a time at home. It's a really, really good program. The problem in the early 90s, when there was so much violence, is there weren't enough slots. And so if you could get a kid into the slot, he'd probably get pretty good attention. But because there were a few slots, kids were getting into them later and later, and the older and the more violent somebody's been involved in, the harder it is to change. We do have now an automatic transfer to the adult system for murders. It was pretty controversial. I think they didn't give the earlier reforms a chance to work, but that's the system. That's what we've decided, and I think we've pretty much tried to let it go now and put the efforts into the kids who have not convicted actually of murder.
Judge Sidney Hanlon and Bill Stewart, I want to thank you very much for talking with me today on Fresh Air.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thanks very much for giving us a chance to talk with you.
Probation Officer Bill Stewart and Presiding Justice Sidney Hanlon of Dorchester District Court in Boston.